Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 164. My name is John. Swim out past the breakers, watch the world die. This is a spoiler-filled podcast about Aquaman, the Lost Kingdom. If you haven't seen the movie, I do highly recommend you do so before continuing. In fact, I'm going to be touching on the entire DCEU and give some quick thoughts on pretty much every movie in the series. As far as The Lost Kingdom is concerned, I did like the movie. I think it had some good action scenes, and more on that later. As always, though, I'm going to begin with the things that I didn't care for in the movie. I'm glad that they kept the humor relatively low for an Aquaman movie, but they did cross the line here and there. There were a lot of telegraphed jokes. For instance, Ocean Master thinking that he can take out Black Manta despite Aquaman explaining Manta has had a power upgrade. Ocean Master doesn't listen, attacks, and gets knocked on his ass with a single punch. That stunned reaction that he gave was pretty frequently used with somebody getting hit, and they went overboard with it. The cockroach scenes were, well, pretty gross, but at least it didn't take me out of the movie. It is sad, though, that the final scene of the DCEU is Ocean Master eating one. Oh, and I know this happens, and a lot of people think that it's funny. A lot of people in the theater where I saw the movie laughed extensively. But a baby boy getting his diaper changed and urinating all over someone is never something that I'm going to laugh at. And even more so when it goes into their mouth. Other than the humor, little things kind of bothered me. For instance, if that camouflage suit worked so well in helping break Orm out of prison, why didn't Aquaman use it to infiltrate Black Manta's hideout? Wouldn't they have more than just one suit? So maybe one or two others could assist? Did I miss something in the movie about this being the lone invisibility suit, and it got damaged beyond repair? Oh well. Gina, who saw the movie with me, didn't like that it heavily leaned into CGI. I was expecting it, so it didn't bother me. And at least the talking fish people look more realistic than the falling babies in The Flash. I know she didn't care for the scenes, especially in the sunken citadel, with the really off-the-wall characters. And she looked at me incredulously when the singing fish woman and her band appeared on the screen. But she's not a comic book slash fantasy slash science fiction kind of person, so I can see why it might be a little off-putting for her. I don't like that Vulko was killed off-screen. If there's a choice between more Willem Dafoe or less Willem Dafoe, you should always choose more. I know sometimes an actor's schedule prevents him or her from being in a sequel. Come to think of it, Billy Crudup dodged a bullet not being able to reprise his role as Barry's dad in The Flash, didn't he? But regardless, why kill off the character of Vulko in a plague that's never even shown, and all he gets is a mention? Maybe since they knew that this was the end, they just didn't care. I would have loved to have seen the Trench again. These creatures are one of the best ideas to come out of the New 52, and they looked really terrifying in the first movie. I'm really sad that the planned spinoff will not be made, and I'm not a horror movie fan, but I would have loved to have seen what James Wan could have done with that story. It's just another sad casualty of a superhero movie series destroyed by overbearing studio executives. I didn't like that there was no post-credit scene. A coda for the DCEU. Here's what the post-credit scene of Aquaman 2 should have been. It's the morning after the post-credit scene in The Flash. A hungover Arthur is arguing with Barry about trying to correct the timeline, citing Barry's own admission from the night before that Bruce Wayne keeps changing every time another correction is made. Barry insists that he finally knows exactly what to do. And Arthur pleads with him to stop and think about the damage he's doing, but Barry runs off despite Arthur's objection. There's a burst of light. As it fades, we now see a grimy alien bar somewhere in the galaxy. There are several characters from DC's outer space comics, like the Omega Men, scattered about the place. Looking into the mirror behind the bar, Lobo, still played by Jason Momoa, of course, lets out a heavy sigh and says, "What the frag?" Pass the baton. Get some intrigue. Get people talking. Not that anyone asked my opinion. But maybe they should have. Okay, let me get to the good stuff. The Lost Kingdom is really a good, fun adventure. I like the pacing of this movie much better than the first Aquaman movie. I mean, maybe they could have shaved off a few minutes, but I didn't find myself wondering how much longer until they move things along like they did in the last movie. And that's really what makes me like this more than its predecessor. The exposition didn't slow the movie down, and there wasn't long stretches of traveling through water for the sole purpose of showing off a lot of pretty CGI. The creatures were pretty crazy, like the guards of the Fisherman Kingdom and whatever the hell those things were that they were riding. And I really liked that the Necros army didn't all look the same. This wasn't like the Ultron army or the Chitauri or even the Parademons. They actually took time to have more than just a single CGI template copied over a few hundred times. And of course, Jason Momoa continues to be great as the character. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy you want to hang out and have a beer with, and that's pretty cool. Nothing was going to top Julie Andrews' voice cameo as the monstrous Carathan in the first movie, but Martin Short as the Jabba the Hutt-esque kingfish was pretty good. I'm glad Arthur Jr. did not experience his comic book fate in the movie. In one of the darkest but often overlooked superhero stories, Black Manta commits infanticide. Yeah, in the comics, I think it was back in the 70s actually, Black Manta murders Aquaman's infant son. Now, the majority of the movie-going audience doesn't know this. I wondered if the movie was going to let the baby get murdered, and if so, how much would people freak out? See, when Batman vs. Superman came out, I heard a lot of people questioning why they would fight when they're both heroes. Only the people who've actually read the comics would know why that would happen. I don't think your average moviegoer and casual comic book fan would understand. Same thing with this situation, so that's why I'm kind of glad they didn't do it, because that probably would have freaked out the audience a little bit too much, except for people like me. Black Manta is a pretty underrated villain, and his lust for revenge is pretty compelling. And although he comes off as one-dimensional, I do love the fact that in the end, he refused Arthur's help and chose to plummet to his death instead of being saved. Plummeting to his death, of course, into an Arctic abyss, much like Superman and Lois did to Zod, Ursa, and Non in Superman 2. The only difference is, Manta did it voluntarily. Yeah, Christopher Reeve Superman straight up killed Zod. Don't forget it. The blue camouflage suit is a nod to the suit from his 80s miniseries. Now, a lot of people hated that costume back in the day, which prompted a pretty quick shift back to the traditional orange and green. Lately, though, I've noticed a little bit more love for that brief new look. And while the classic looks great, I like that blue camouflage because it was a drastic difference that still fit the character, and it was pretty unique at the time. I like the resolution of Arthur and Orm's conflict, Ocean Master. I think Orm came off as a much more rounded character after this movie. I like that there was so much anger, even though Arthur had just broken him out of prison. I like that Orm vowed to go back to prison because his honor as a king would demand it. That gave him more depth, showing that he actually took his title as more than just a means to start wars. When Arthur confessed that he didn't even want to be king and only took the throne to stop the war, Orm finally began to see things from a viewpoint other than his own. And then when Arthur challenged him to try to understand the surface dwellers, you could see the seeds begin to grow in his mind. It's a damn shame we can't see more of Orm's evolution. Okay, I'm going to get political here for just about 30 seconds. I promise to be quick. I love that the Atlantean Council is all pissed off about the surface dwellers polluting the planet, but it turns out it's forgotten Atlantean technology that is the true culprit. It reminds me of all those climate change scientists and politicians and celebrities who tell us, you and I have to change our way of life, and then hop in their private jets to fly off to some remote Pacific island to have a climate change conference. Fuck off, assholes. Okay, politics over. Let me address the elephant in the room, or perhaps the better phrase would be, let me address the shit in the bed. I have almost no knowledge of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard mess, other than that she allegedly shit on their bed out of spite. And from commentary I've heard, that neither of them came off as being good to each other, much less being good people in general. That being said, I do find her quite attractive. Mira is also a very alluring character to begin with. I said it when the first Aquaman movie came out, red hair turns me on, even if it is blatantly fake. The fact is, she is as much eye candy for me as Jason Momoa is for my wife, Gina. I'm glad they kept her in there and they gave her some pretty important parts. I get that some people wanted to cut her out entirely from the movie. That's not only logistically foolish, it's horribly asinine. And I don't want to slip back into social politics, so let me just say that people need to check themselves before casting stones. So, I've made it pretty damn clear, I like the DCEU. I'm not going to apologize for that. I think there's a lot of good in the movies, and I think that if Marvel had done the same thing with their characters, the critics would have been more kind. I will also be perfectly honest and say that I will always watch a DC movie at least once because these are characters I grew up with and hold a special place in my mind. Now, some people may laugh at that, but I don't care. Star Wars fans have been shelling out money for every movie episode that has come out, despite the fact that they generally hated the Disney trilogy, are mixed at best about Lucas's prequel trilogy, and really started to talk trash with the Return of the Jedi. So, despite the fact that the movie series peaked over 40 years ago in the eyes of critics and most fans, people still spend their money and still defend their passion. Marvel fans still shell out money, despite the fact that, at least in the first three phases, they kept watching the same fucking movie over and over again. Now, I went through this a while back where I explained that Captain America: The First Avenger is the only unique movie in the first three phases. Just as a quick example, Iron Man, Ant-Man, and Black Panther are the same fucking movie. A good guy in a technologically advanced supersuit battles a bad guy in a similar supersuit because the bad guy believes he deserves something that the good guy has. People don't care. They still throw money at it. All I'm saying is I will keep giving DC a chance because I love DC Comics. And don't laugh at me until you can say that you don't do the same for your passion. Now, I'm going to do my updated DCEU ranking from worst to best with a brief review of each. Also, I'm dividing this list into three sections. If you find the original list I did on Twitter back when Flash came out and was featured on the Blackcast episode, you'll know some of these have moved positions because some of these movies, especially in the second group, are pretty close together, so I may change my personal ranking based on whichever I saw recently or simply how I feel on any given day. Okay, worst to first. First group. The ones I don't need to ever see again unless Riff Tracks makes fun of it. Wonder Woman 1984. Easily my least favorite and most disappointed. It was a waste of Kristen Wiig's, Gal Gadot's, and Christopher Pine's talents, and a drastic drop in quality from the first movie. Riff Tracks did make an accompanying Just the Jokes riff with Bridget Nelson and Mary Jo Peel, and it is the only way I will ever watch this train wreck of a movie ever again. And if you don't know what I mean by Riff Tracks or Just the Jokes, please Google them and thank me later. Next to worst, The Flash. I've dropped it lower because the more I think of it, the less I like it. Why? Because in the Snyder Cut, Flash was the hero. He saved everybody. He proved himself, and he proved to others how good he was, and he became a stronger character. This movie was obviously spun from the Whedon cut and made Barry stupid and annoying, and all of the good things that built him up in the Snyder Cut were gone. I keep trying to convince myself to watch it again on streaming, in the hope that I can find more to like. But I just can't bring myself to do it. And not even Michael Keaton as Batman could save it. Suicide Squad. This is the 2016 version. Now, there are some good things about this movie that I did like. Deadshot is a great character, and El Diablo is quite the standout. I know that some people hated the overuse of music, and I can't argue with that. But at least they used good music. My problem is they had no business pitting a team of street-level villains against a mystical threat. And Stay Evil, Dollface, is easily one of the stupidest lines ever in a comic book movie. Justice League, specifically the Whedon cut, the theatrical release. You want to know the real reasons I saw this 7 times in the theater? One, because I had multiple people ask me to go with them to see it. And two, because when I was a kid, I saw the animated Transformers movie 6 times, which was my record. And I figure if there was ever going to be a movie that I wanted to break that record, it was of my favorite superhero team. I said before, I'll say it again, it was much more generic. It was much more like, well, a Marvel movie. very palatable for fans, not very challenging for people, you know, who want to see their heroes have more depth. But really, the Snyder parts were good. More on that later, of course. Next group. The ones that obviously have flaws, but are still great for DC fans. Black Adam. Black Adam is too rigid and stoic, not good lead character material. Black Adam is the type of character who works better as either an antagonist or in an ensemble. Dwayne Johnson just barely made him work. The best part of the movie for me was the Justice Society, and especially Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate. When Black Adam came out, I did advocate for a Dr. Fate movie, and I still do. Other than that, I still don't understand why the Justice Society would be allied with Amanda Waller. That Henry Cavill Superman cameo was bittersweet as the studio would give us one last glimmer of hope before throwing it all away. And to be perfectly honest, that cameo, Shazam should have been there in addition or instead. Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Okay, this one was like a puzzle where the pieces don't seem to quite fit. But the fight scenes were excellent. Ewan McGregor is underrated as a manic Black Mask. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead always gives movies extra points in my book. The Suicide Squad, obviously the 2021 version. You know, I never expected to see Starro in a live-action movie, but there it is. A good ensemble cast and a great fake-out in the opening minutes of the movie. On the downside, grossest villain death in the series. And I'm still bummed that they killed off Rick Flagg Jr., Captain Boomerang, and Polka Dot Man, who was the standout character in that film. Aquaman, the first one. Now, this is the highest grossing movie of the bunch, made over $1 billion in the box office. It was a lot of fun, visually stunning. The trench creatures deserve that spinoff. But I still feel they could have cut it by about 20 minutes. Shazam, Fury of the Gods. The first movie deals with Billy finding the family he never knew he wanted in his foster home. It makes sense. The sequel deals with him holding on too tightly to them. I don't think a lot of people understood that. The movie itself loses points for not bringing in more classic Shazam villains, but it does have one of my favorite post-credit scenes of all time, and I will be so angry if they never give us a Mark Strong Savannah and Mr. Mind teaming up against Zachary Levi's Shazam. Next on the list, Aquaman the Lost Kingdom. Yeah, I already went over that. I hope you paid attention. So now we come to the last group, the ones I will continue to defend and recommend as great superhero movies. So I guess let's see, we've got five left here. So, number five, Shazam. It was fun, charming, silly at appropriate times, and at other times, surprisingly dark. And to be perfectly honest, I just love Zachary Levi. This is the modern interpretation of a kid in a man's body, and Levi pulled it off as perfectly as Tom Hanks in Big. Plus, the live-action debut of Mr. Mind, who takes the top spot on my list of comic book characters I never expected to see in a live-action movie. Number four, Wonder Woman. This was a damn near perfect movie. Every member of the cast was outstanding. My biggest problem was the final battle with Ares, who should have been portrayed in his dark god form, instead keeping his human face. It made it look like Diana was beating up an old man. But that no man's land scene has become absolutely iconic. Number 3, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, Ultimate Edition. Now, if you're wondering if I was ranking the theatrical release instead of the Ultimate Edition, I would probably drop it down between Aquaman and the Suicide Squad. The reason why I chose the Ultimate Edition is because it fills out the story that was missing with the theatrical release much better. Makes the plot make a lot more sense. Lex Luthor knew their secrets and was manipulating them the whole time. And people like me, who appreciate Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns and Dan Jurgens' Death of Superman, got the movie a lot more than non-comic book readers. Batman taking out the bad guys in the warehouse is the best Batman fight scene in movies so far. And yes, they both have mothers named Martha. And in that moment, Batman finally stops seeing Superman as an alien, which is why Snyder does it that way. But yes, I think it would have worked better if Lois had intervened and been the one to use Martha's name. Number 2. Zack Snyder's Justice League. Growing up, every Thanksgiving, we had green bean casserole, which was made with canned cream of mushroom soup and canned green beans. And I liked it when I was a kid. Then one day, I tried a recipe where I built my own mushroom cream sauce and used frozen French cut green beans instead of canned. Now, this is a much longer process, but produced a vastly superior result. The simple but processed casserole versus the more complex yet satisfying casserole is analogous to the Whedon cut versus the Snyder cut. Now, I'm sure if Snyder had finished the theatrical release, it would not have been 4 hours long, but I'll bet he could have clocked it in at 2.5 to 3 hours, and people would finally begin to understand what was being built and kept the story going. Flash, Cyborg, and Steppenwolf are all infinitely superior in this version of the movie, and Warner Brothers made a huge mistake not letting this continue. And number 1, still, Man of Steel. And I'm not even a big Superman fan. But I'm going to say it. I know I'll get crap for saying it, but I will anyway. The Man of Steel is easily a better Superman movie than Superman or Superman 2. That's right, Christopher Reeve fans, I said it. The people who decry the carnage in the final battle were not paying attention to the rest of the movie, and I've gone into depth on that in the past. The people who decry Superman killing Zod forget that it was already done in Superman 2, I mentioned that earlier, and no, the deleted scene does not count. And Superman killed Zod in the comics as well. The Kents in this movie are good, pragmatic, down-to-earth people trying to build the same in their son. Wipe your mind of the rose-colored nostalgia of the Reeves quadrilogy and watch this one again. It's a damn good movie. You'll notice I didn't include Blue Beetle, because it's been reported that they plan to incorporate him into the new DCU. If I were to fit that in the DCEU list, I would probably put that movie between Fury of the Gods and Lost Kingdom. Looking ahead, I'm only about 40% interested in the Gunniverse. I hope they keep Zalo Merduena as Blue Beetle, as it has been rumored they plan to do, and Zachary Levi as Shazam. I think it would be pretty stupid of them to get rid of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. I'm okay with them recasting Aquaman if Jason Momoa moves over to play Lobo. I'd be very happy if a lot of the actors who played secondary characters, like the Justice Society, the Birds of Prey, and the Suicide Squad, return, even if they remain in smaller parts. The only upcoming DCU projects I have any interest in are Lanterns, Booster Gold, Swamp Thing, and Creature Commandos. The first three, because I have liked the characters since my youth. And the last, because even though they are very obscure characters, I really love crazy concepts like that. And they were created by J.M. DeMatteis, who is one of those Silver and Bronze Age creators who just doesn't get enough recognition. I'm not interested in an Amanda Waller TV series. Like Black Adam, she's not really a great lead character. She works better as the antagonist to a different lead. The series about Gotham without Batman was horrible, so I don't have interest in Paradise Lost, a Themyscira series without Wonder Woman. I will admit I haven't read much of The Authority, but what I did read wasn't enough to keep me going. Supergirl? Well, Supergirl sounds like a disaster waiting to happen. Brave and the Bold is supposed to have Batman and Robin, Bruce and Damian Wayne. Okay, but what about Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, Tim Drake? See, this was the problem with the New 52, skipping great Silver and Bronze Age teen superheroes for the modern day iteration. And then there's Superman Legacy. I said this before, and I will say it again. James Gunn has shown that he does pretty well at making superhero films and shows starring characters who are kind of assholes. The Suicide Squad, a bunch of screwed up asshole villains. The Peacemaker TV series, a bunch of screwed up asshole anti-heroes. Even Guardians of the Galaxy were repeatedly described in their own movie as a-holes. I don't have a lot of confidence that Gunn can make a Superman film. Especially the milquetoast, carbon copy Christopher Reeve, squeaky clean Boy Scout that is expected from Warner Brothers executives, people who haven't picked up a comic book since 1985, or people who can only accept a Superman who always knows what to do and who never does anything wrong. In other words, boring. I don't know anything about the actors playing Superman and Lois, so I'm going to reserve judgment. I love Nicholas Holt, but I just can't see him playing Lex Luthor. I love Nathan Fillion, and I can see him playing any Green Lantern, except Guy Gardner, the one he's playing. And I know there are plenty of examples of actors who have surprised us in superhero or supervillain roles, like Michael Keaton and Heath Ledger. But that luck is bound to run out sometime. Right now, the only real win I have with Superman Legacy is Anthony Carrigan playing Metamorpho, an actor I love playing a character I love. And of course, my luck will probably be in only about 3 minutes of the movie. At least the first project up will be the one I'm most interested in, Creature Commandos. And hopefully, by then, there will be some better news out on the DC front. Until then, go see that Aquaman sequel It's a fun adventure and a good end for this continuity. But I don't care what anyone else says. I enjoyed the DCEU. And it has now become my Lost Kingdom. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.